Hello everyone and welcome to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast number 344. He's a changing man. On the way, Subsway, Baggies bounced and time for a Brum deal. Pretty sure I've used that pun every time they've played Birmingham. My name is Michael Bailey. Hello there. Joining us here this Monday afternoon at Archant Towers, we have Chief Norwich City Correspondent Paddy Davitt, our corresponding colleague Dave Freezer, and our visual man about town, Tony Thrussell. Gentlemen, good afternoon. How are we all? Pad, I'll address you first. How's you?
Not having the best of days today, mate. Things are coming on top, but we don't need to get into that, but... Yeah, no, it's as you just said there, it's feeling like one of them long, drawn-out January days. So it's quite depressing.
So it's good that we've hauled you into a room. We didn't
that
actually
sets
physically
the tone.
Haul you.
That sets the tone. People will now be pressing stop or delete or whatever. Please don't do that. There's plenty of good content coming up. Just in terms of my mood, I've had better Mondays.
One for the purists, this podcast, maybe. Dave, how are you? You're not Paddy, because I've just spoken to Paddy. Dave, how are you? Oh, God, this is good.
Yeah, I'm fine. It's funny how much of a difference one goal can make, can't it, in terms of the mood. I suspect if Jordan Rhodes hadn't have found the back of the net, this might have been a slightly more depressing Monday.
Oh, God, we need to pick this up. Tony, how are you?
Yeah, I'm okay.
Brilliant.
Well,
what a 20 minutes this is going to be. Now, just before we get stuck into the proper stuff, remember you can get in touch with us all here to share your thoughts, set our agenda. We can set an agenda, but we'd like you to get involved in it. Just send us an email to thepinken@archant.co.uk or get in touch via all the usual and possible social media channels you can imagine. That is, of course, our own or those of The Pinken. And make sure you don't miss a single podcast throughout this season by subscribing. All the details are at pinken.com/podcast. Now, the astute of you will remember, before Christmas, we discovered the Football School book. Football School, the amazing quiz book, that is. It is just a World Cup book, I've just twigged, so that's good. We found it and thought, why not do that on the podcast? So we're going to do that, everyone. Now, we're going to answer... We're going to put the answer forward in our new Pinken podcast, Extra Time. It's a good idea, isn't it? Which Tony's going to film and will be available on the Pinken app. If you haven't downloaded it already, just search Pinken. That's two words, Pinken, in either Google Play or the App Store. And we'll give you the answer to this teaser, which, Paddy, I'll ask you, can I have a number between 1 and 15, please?
7.
10? 7.
7? 1, 10.
No, seven. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Mighty mascots. And between 1 and 20, Dave?
11.
It's not that character who's dressed as a match. What was he dressed as?
Boilerman.
Boilerman. Everyone was enjoying him, weren't they?
Set for a World Cup in future, that was. 11, you said, Dave, didn't you? This is obviously going to... I'm doing this one-handed as well, which will never help. Here we go. Footix was the name of the mascot for the 1998 World Cup in France. Which animal, one of France's national symbols, was he? A frog, a cockerel, a bear, or a fox?
Cockerel.
Yeah, I think that's what I'd have gone for as well.
Literally, I couldn't tell you. How about you, Tony?
I can picture it.
Not a frog. Always. I mean, that's pretty. That is pretty on the line.
I'm gonna say, yeah, cockerel.
Okay. Well, excitingly, the answer to that question in our new Pinken podcast Extra Time. Don't worry, we won't just do that. We'll also talk about some football as well. How exciting. Anyway, I think we should probably move on to our first section as usual. That was the week that was a West Brom, of course, Norwich City picking up a point, which probably, and indeed most definitely, looked unlikely 20 minutes, half an hour into the game, didn't it, Pad?
Spot on, mate, yeah. No, I thought they were, they were in danger of getting a bit of chasing. If West Brom had got a second after Dwight Gale's first, after about, what minute was that, DF? 12 minutes in, yeah. Did get a bit rocky at times thereafter until probably about the half an hour mark, and then I think Farke was spot on. It was almost as if the younger players stopped looking around at who they were playing and the surroundings and warmed to the task, and one or two of the players coming back from injury, like Buendia, for example, maybe they got up to speed. And I thought Norwich were good then, or at least par, whereas for the first 30 minutes of that 90-minute game, they were decidedly second best. And Yeah, and then we all know how it played. We saw the character again of that squad in abundance. But, yeah, it was very worrying that first 20, 25 minutes because they were really off the pace in every facet, I felt.
Worrying because we know the games they've got coming up as well, Dave. So what do we do? Do we worry about how that first half now went, or can we take a lot of heart from the fact that the second half was a lot more even, wasn't it? Although it still kind of felt like West Brom had the better chances.
Yeah, I think you can just take the character of the team and hanging on in there, because they were hanging on in there till half time. They just needed to get back into the dressing room at 1-0, and then of course they came out and within what, a minute 90 seconds, Tim Krul had to make two blinding saves to keep them in the game. They'd had another couple of chances. Dwight Gale lashed one over, didn't he, before Norwich woke up. So, you know, fair play to the younger lads. They did just about hang in there, but it was very ropey at points. If West Brom had been more clinical, if West Brom had had Harvey Barnes, that could have been a 4-0 defeat quite comfortably, I would have thought. But that's not what happened, thankfully. And Daniel Farke did the right thing and got things turned around.
He did, and he made the right changes, didn't he? I mean, as you said, it was a lot more even in the second half as well, Pat, so that obviously helped. But it was almost the combination of bringing Jordan and Kenny on, wasn't it? I mean, obviously, it clearly was, as a matter of fact, because they were the two that made the goal from a free kick. But, I mean, the idea of that probably works in the head of the service and the finisher. It's sort of been done with Hernandez and Rhodes in the past as well, hasn't it? So he can take a lot of credit for that, can't he?
Yeah, Daniel? Although I did put that very point to him, because for me, the parallels with Bristol City were obviously evident. You know, they were chasing a game. He's gone free at the back. He's switched Aarons to left wing back. I think he brought on Hernandez that day at Bristol, and those two players actually combined, and not the same personnel, but certainly the same outcome. But as always with Farke, he's very happy to take a step back unless he's conducting the away end as he was again, which I thought was quite amusing. The West Brom fans directly to the right as we were looking at it, they weren't overly complimentary about what that was going all about. The orchestration from Herr Farke, but ordinarily, he's quite happy to step back and let his players take the credit, and he did again. As he said, a coach can have an idea, but they have to carry it out, and boy, did they. You know, Jordan Rhodes, first touch. I don't think Kenny McLean could have had too many before the free kick. So, yeah, what a wonderful impact from those players and the head coach, and that's what you want. You know, we've had recent managers past in Norwich colours, heavily criticised for their inability to affect a game in the second half particularly. You couldn't accuse Farke of that. So that's good to see that there's a head coach fully in control of what he's trying to do and has the ability and obviously the resources. Then you need to be able to turn around and see that you've got a Rhodes or McLean to influence the game, because it's been proven that you know, Norwich aren't going to get to, hopefully, where they're going to get to at the end of this season with just 11, 12, 13 players. It is going to be a squad effort.
Is the timing of the subs okay? Does he maybe still wait a little bit late to make them?
Yeah, there's a debate to be had. I mean, obviously, because as Dave rightly said at the start, because it's Rhodes comes on, scores, then everything's rosy in the garden. If that had not had enough time to make an impact, then I'm sure that's a charge that would have been levelled at him, because it was 81st minute, I think, he made that double change. So, but then he might counter that. Yes, West Brom were having a few chances, but Norwich were getting a lot of joy as well when Srebeni came on. So maybe he felt that the tide was turning, but you can only go on how the game panned out, and the game panned out with a Norwich comeback engineered by two substitutes he made. So on this occasion, yeah, you couldn't argue with his timing.
I'd love to know if Jordan Rhodes said to McLean as they came on the pitch, near post, put it in the near post, that's where I'm going. I'd like to think that's how it worked, because both of those crosses from McLean did exactly that. And it was a peach of a cross, and as much as it's great for Jordan Rhodes, I think we'll probably come onto this a bit more later, we probably know it's unlikely he's going to start ahead of Teemu Pukki much, even though he's doing a decent job, and that he maybe doesn't quite fit Farker's plan as well. But for me, Kenny McLean's a massive positive. When you've got Todd Cantwell looking a bit tired, when Emi Buendia, you know, I know he's just back from an injury, but he certainly wasn't at his best, to have a Scotland international who's very highly rated, who's shown for Aberdeen that he can be a real creator, to have him now back in the mix, I'd be tempted to have him in at the number 10 role on Friday night against Birmingham if Stieperman isn't fit. So, you know, fair play. And yes, Srebeni did make a bit of an impact as well, didn't he? There was a lovely turn away from Gareth Barry and just didn't quite connect with his shot. I thought that was going to be his moment. But I think what it came down to in the end, we've seen most of the teams in the Championship start to flag against Norwich, don't they, because of the style of play. And I know they didn't dominate possession and things on Saturday. I haven't got it in front of me, sorry. But when you've got Gareth Barry, Chris Brunt, Dawson, Hagazi, they're not really players who are going to still be running at maximum when things are sort of getting towards the end of the game. So, you know, the game plan did sort of work in the end, but wow, did you need Tim Krul to play his part?
Yeah, it did kind of... It was a curiosity there, maybe, that Darren Moore didn't make any changes sooner, possibly to freshen up, which I think has been...
He could have made another one, couldn't he? He didn't bring Wes on. We all can believe, why is he not on the pitch?
Or at least a third change. Tim Krul had a look back at the saves, and they're good ones, but then had he let any of them in, would we be criticising him? Yes, probably is the answer. I don't know, you might disagree with me, but the fact that he's been solid in these last two away games is a real positive, isn't it? Because, you know, they've sowed a lot to Norwich picking up those points.
Yeah, true, but that to me is a concern, because he's having to do levels of work, as in shot stopping particularly, that he wasn't doing prior to Brentford. And the reason for me is quite simple, because you haven't got Leitner there. So because you haven't got Leitner there alongside Tete, the game is far too stretched now. And that's not a slight on Vrančić or Tribal before him, or even if you tried McLean in there. The nature of the game is, without Leitner's control and composure, they're too stretched through central areas. And what's that doing? It's basically meaning the back line are coming under a lot more stress because they're less protected than they are when Tribal's there alongside Tete. And as a result, you can't rely on Zimmerman and four, three other young lads to basically repel everything. And that's why Krul's now having to come to the party. So it's good to see that he's got that ability when tested. But for me personally, you'd rather not have him have to make them type of saves, because... you know, there will be games down the stretch if he's getting overworked to that degree where it inevitably, you know, he won't be able to keep the ball out of the net. And, you know, the sooner Leitner comes back, it feels like we're building, well, I'm building him up into this Superman player. But it's no coincidence that the level in terms of results have dipped without Leitner in the side. And people might say there's many other factors, but I think he is pretty key, because when he's in there, there's a lot more control and composure to the way Norwich play. And when he's not there, the reverse is true, and you get these kind of basketball type affairs, which we're getting now pretty much since just before Christmas.
Great points. How good are West Brom, Dave? And we're looking at it in terms of how this season is going to unravel from here. Safe to say, if Norwich finish best above West Brom, then they're going to be in a very, very decent position. Or, I would say that probably Leeds and Villa are the only two sides on the day that have sort of impressed me more. But then we're only talking about one game, aren't we, at that point?
I thought they were good, but the fact that they didn't finish Norwich off is going to be a little bit of a worry for them. I think the blow for them with losing Harvey Barnes going back to Leicester, recalled from his loan, was that they also didn't have Matt Phillips available, who is probably their other sort of player who's like that. I think the sort of buzz around the Hawthorns was that there's Premier League interest in him and that he might be going as well. So was it a genuine injury? Gale looked very good, I thought, looked very sharp as well, although of course it was his ridiculous foul which gave Norwich the opportunity to get the equaliser. I'd imagine Darren Moore absolutely tore a strip off him once he got in the dressing room.
He came off the pitch within a few seconds.
He did. And how Robson-Kanu, who's, I know he did well for Wales for a patch, but he's quite a frustrating player, isn't he? He didn't really take his opportunities. So, and Rodriguez didn't offer a lot either, to be honest. So maybe if they made a couple of good additions this month, I think they could still be in the top two mix. But based on what I saw on Saturday, I think they're probably more likely a playoff team. And then obviously you're into the lottery phase, aren't you?
Wouldn't want to play them in the playoffs, I've got to be honest. And we all agreed for that, I think. Okay, gongs of the week. We all know we love this bit. How about our big Duncan Forbes hero of the week? I normally put some suggestions in the script. Yes, we do have a script, but I haven't done this week because I haven't really thought about it myself. So who would like to go first?
Yeah, I'll throw one. Well, hero is plural, and it's going to be Norwich's sports science / physio department. To echo what Daniel said on Friday, although he wasn't keen to praise them too much because they still haven't delivered him Leitner, but the fact that Buendia came back 10-14 days ahead of schedule, Tete was back, Lewis was back, looks like hopefully Steeperman will be in the mix for Birmingham this Friday, you can't underestimate how important that could be, because they do look like they're limping into these games a little bit, and they look a bit weary at times. You know, I'll go back to Bristol before Christmas, and okay, there was supposedly a flu virus swirling around the camp, but they were so off the pace that day, and it was quite disturbing really that they were so lacking in energy and tempo, and that clearly doesn't help when you're relying on a core group of players. So yeah, long-winded way of saying hat tip to those characters, because the more options he's got, the better.
Yeah,
hang on.
Dave?
Let's go Jordan Rhodes then. I mean, he's the man of the moment. It was a decent finish because the ball was a little behind him, wasn't he? He just managed to sort of hold his run enough to poke it in. Maybe Sam Johnston could have done a little bit better with his save, but in real time, it all happens very quickly, doesn't it? His defence are moving out of the way and he has to react. But yeah, 9 goals for the season, I think that is. That's 6 in the league, plus the hat-trick at Wickham in the cup, isn't it? So, you know, I was taken to task by a couple of fans actually on Twitter for my match report at pinken.com. I'd said fairly high up in the report that it was his first goal in 10 games, which is factually correct, but someone probably fairly did point out that how many of those have been many minutes. You know, they have been snatched substitution appearances, you know, 5 minutes here, 3 minutes there. He's really not played a lot of football in that 10 games, so I did tweak that a little bit. I thought that was probably a fair enough point. And you know, fair.
Sorry, Dave, I mean, on that point, his goals to minutes ratio would be quite interesting, wouldn't it?
I think he's about a goal every 2 games at the moment, or a goal every 180 minutes. Yeah. So, yeah, so that was a fair enough point. And, you know, fair play to him. His attitude is spot on, isn't it? He, you know, when you interviewed him afterwards, Michael, he's such a likeable person, isn't he? And such a positive team player and all that sort of stuff. But he's keeping going. And now he's really asking the question of Daniel as to whether he should be in that starting lineup or at least be getting more time off the bench.
I love the finish. It's so gorgeous because it's almost shaped as if he's going to take a touch, and he just waits for the ball and just cushions it. That was almost, he took it so early that it's probably what flummoxed Johnston in goal. Yeah, I think even regardless of his minutes, it's 29 appearances and 9 goals, so that's still 1 in 3, yeah. Which even for a sake of minutes is not bad. He's probably not, Grant Hanley probably isn't his favourite person, because had he have had 90 minutes against Portsmouth with an actual 11, he might have been able to push his case a bit further than have a run around for 10 men.
And likewise Ben Marshall. Had to drop back to left back, didn't he, against Portsmouth?
Indeed. Well, we won't lay into Grant again.
Okay, our Kevin Muscat villain of the week.
I've got one here, Jay Rodriguez. Terrible tackle on Max Ahrens, and I think Max did him a huge favour by not making a big deal of that. I saw somebody jokingly say on Twitter, I can't remember who it was now, but that if that had been Buendia, Rodriguez would have been off because he'd have rolled a few times off the pitch, wouldn't he? But Max saw it come in. I mean, that could have been a bad tackle. It was very similar to the Stieperman challenge the day against Forest, wasn't it? Yeah. Charged in trying to block the ball. If Max hadn't moved, he could well have injured him quite badly. And I think the referee pretty much missed it because it was right in front of us, wasn't it? And we were all, whoa, that's not a good tackle. And even you could feel the nerves as the referee sort of fiddled about in his pocket what was going to come out. So it was just a yellow card, fortunately, for Mr. Rodriguez.
And the Stieperman one's been brought up a few times because you almost delving into how much contact should play a part in how bad a...
But apparently the law, unless I will stand to be corrected, the law clearly states it doesn't need to be contact. It's intent.
Yeah, exactly.
It's intent.
Dangerous play, isn't it? Dangerous. If you make that contact, you can break someone's leg.
Exactly. So I suppose the fact that Stieperman got away with one in that regard, even though he was maybe a bit further away, I don't know. But then if you're, you know, 10 yards away and slide in front of a player, you're not going to...
Well, it's macho man time again, isn't it? Like Grant Hanley, you know, he's charged into that one to try and stop a Norwich attack, to try and please his home fans. He slid, what, good 5 yards into the tackle. By the letter of the law, that is dangerous play. So, you know, our referee's going to clamp down on it or not. But equally, do we want to see football having 3 red cards in every game? Probably not.
The only thing we'll say, Mario Vrančić put in a sort of a slightly naughty challenge with his studs quite high up and late. I can't remember who it was. Hip level. It looked bad from one viewing. He got a yellow once referee Darren England brought things back. So that could have been just as bad.
It bubbled up at one point, didn't it? There was Barry got a yellow card just before that for crunching Campwell. And then there was a Norwich player who got booked. That wasn't the Vrančić one, was it? That was Buendia before he went off because he was boiling up a bit, wasn't he? And then Tim Krul obviously got one for time wasting and injury time. It ended up being quite a feisty one.
And finally, Simeon Jackson, moment of the week. I mean, we've obviously got Rhodes' goal. I mean, you mentioned the sort of celebrations, if you like, at full time. I thought that was a nice contrast between, as you say, the Albion fans were a bit like, well, what's all this going on? Yeah. And busy booing Tim Krul and what have you. But, yeah. You know, that sort of atmosphere with their Norwich looking so together. Admittedly, they scored late on and it was a point that they gained, so they probably would feel like that. I like that. That would be my nomination. But any others?
I mean, we touched on Gale, didn't you, Dia? That, for me, was the moment when he, for no reason, I don't know what he was trying to do, unless he was trying to clear out the boiler man who was in the corner of the pitch. But he's basically just shoved over Hernandez. The ball's going nowhere. It's more or less in that quadrant, corner quadrant.
Yeah, he's going nowhere, was he?
And then it's cause and effect then. Then it's a free kick, brings pressure on his team. They clear the first one, they don't clear the second one, and a win. Conversely, we're talking about Norwich, but if you're West Brom, you win that game 1-0, that could be like the touch paper, because you know, they've played in front of a full house, they've got the win, the confidence will surge through them. They've gone out to Dubai with a spring in their step for their warm weather training, they come back, crack on for the rest of the season, whereas now they'll just be that sting that they've let 2 points basically slip, and that all's traced back to stupidity from Dwight Gale.
Bang on.
And obviously we've already said the Rhodes goal, haven't we? But so I'll go for the Tim Krul save from Chris Brunt, literally within 30-40 seconds of the second half starting. Daniel Farker has obviously given his team his instructions. They've gone out there, and within 30 seconds West Brom have hit a long ball towards Jamal Lewis at left back. I think it's Robson Kanu wins the ball in the air, might be Rodriguez, nods it down, Brunt turns into space, lovely curling shot, and Krul tips that over. If they score then, I think West Brom would have gone on to win quite comfortably. So fair play to Tim Krul. You know, he has had his critics this season, but these last two away games, without him, Norwich wouldn't have had 2 points.
Right, I was going to do on the sidelines now, but I think we're going to leave these for the Pink and Extra pot. Tony, you'll be delighted to know he is still here.
Yes, I'm just taking notes.
Doing a cracking job. So in which case, we'll move on to mailbag. This is the part of the pod where the discussion is led by your emails, tweets, and other helpful hints in terms of direction, which is always good. Dave, I'll read them out if you want, and then you can answer them, because you might like to do that. So first off, let's see, at TJNCFC, he asks, if Ben Marshall does end up moving to Millwall on loan, can you see us bringing in a homegrown player this window? Also, any update on Leitner's return date?
Can I see them bringing a homegrown player? Well, I mean, if they're going to sanction a Marshall departure, then I certainly think something they'd have to consider.
Louis Thompson back now, haven't they? He was on the bench.
Yeah. So, you know, we don't know the veracity of any reports that he was sat in the stands watching Millwall Blackburn. I would find that very strange, given that Daniel took a very swollen travelling party with him to West Brom, including the likes of Hanley. So why wasn't Marshall involved there? So 2.5 weeks left in the window. It wouldn't surprise me at all if he departs somewhere, because it feels like it hasn't worked. It feels like we're in Marley Watkins territory again. So, but that's obviously one facet of that equation. The other one would be leaving themselves a little bit too short, because all it needs is one of those homegrown lads to get an injury, and then where are you? Insufficient numbers on benches, which would be a ridiculous scenario to find themselves in. So, yeah, plenty to weigh up on that whole thing. And in terms of Leitner, from Friday's press briefing, still on track for the start of Feb. You hope that, like we discussed with Wendy, they can maybe shave a few days off, whether that brings him into the equation for Sheffield United. I think that's the 26th of Jan. But that said, could you see him getting pitched in against Wilder's mob? No, I couldn't see that at all. Not with that, everything that'll be at stake in that game. So probably more likely Leeds away, isn't it? I think the next one after that, start of Feb. So that'd be a good boost if he's in the travelling party for that.
Nice easy game to start with.
Yeah, but I mean, the way Leeds play, he might get a bit more time on the ball. I think you know, Wilder, he will come here and it'll be to the trumpets. So I think with Leeds, they've got one or two decent ball players in the middle of the park. So might be a better one to throw him into, I think.
They do press a bit as well, though, don't they? But yeah, with Marshall, I've spoken to someone who knows Millwall very well, and I think they are keen to have him back. They've got a hole in their team which he would fill nicely. Played on the left wing for them to very good effect second half of last season. But from what we heard last week, Birmingham were obviously keen, weren't they, on a loan, and they were told, no, we're not interested in selling. So, like you say, Pat, I could see it potentially happening, but I think they probably would need to bring in a homegrown option. It's just a the McLean thing is such a shame, isn't it, that he doesn't count as homegrown. And, you know, all right, Scotland isn't England, but, you know, we are the United Kingdom. Should it really not count that Scotland? I suppose you would then have the negative effect on Scotland, wouldn't you, if they didn't. I'm not sure what their homegrown quotas and stuff are like. I don't know, it's a complicated one, isn't it? But if he's not here by the end of the month, I don't think anyone's going to be massively surprised. I can't, as we sit here today, it would take quite an upturn for him to play a big role for Norwich, wouldn't it?
How about Nick Alpers? Has Godfrey earned an ongoing regular spot in the starting 11? Daniel Farker is comfortable starting him at left back if necessary. Would he also start him as a defensive midfielder if Tessie misses time? Which I think he probably would. But yeah, I mean, we've got this point now, aren't we? Hanley served a suspension, Close was back on the bench, four centre-backs to pick from. And I guess it's how long does Ben stay in? He was caught out for Dwight Gale's goal, but it's a sort of mistake we saw Christoph Zimmermann make a few times last season, and was, you know, obviously has improved off the back of it, and Ben's still learning so much about where he's playing.
I think Ben's done pretty well defensively, but he certainly doesn't have the passing game that Tim Closer does, but then there are next to no defenders in the Championship who do. For me, Pad touched on it a little bit earlier, that spine of the team is Krull, Closer, Leitner, Stiepermann, Pukki. That is the team which put Norwich on the top of the table and were firing on all cylinders. They were getting the best out of each other. And Ben Godfrey doesn't offer you that option that Closer does. So for me, I've said it a lot of times. I'm bored of saying it. I'm sure Ben doesn't like me saying it if he ever hears these podcasts or reads our articles. I want to see him in defence midfield. I think Alex Tetti has looked a little bit off the pace just the last couple of months. He's, you know, still doing the job that Tetti does, but maybe doesn't look as sharp as he did the opening months of the season. I would really like to see Ben get a chance there. And now you've got Hanley, Zimmermann, Closer all fit, I can't see him featuring too much though.
This is an interesting one, isn't it? Because this isn't, we haven't got a left back, let's give Jamal a chance, or we don't really rate Ivo Pinto as a defensive player, let's give Max Aarons a chance. This is Ben Godfrey at centre back and three really good centre-back options in a team that is, let's be honest, trying to go up. It's a really difficult balance, isn't it, between having the faith in the youngsters and those and giving them the time to learn, and also being your best competitive edge in a really competitive field.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm far more comfortable now. I've seen him have a run of games in the defensive areas than I was prior to, but for me, of those four, you take Hanley out of the equation now. I don't think he's in the mix now. He didn't do himself any favours against Portsmouth. I checked earlier on, he's played six times, made six starts in the league. He's a bit part player right here, right now. He might come into the equation if the door opens for him, but it's one from three for Birmingham in terms of how Farker would see it. And he was very, very effusive about Zimmermann around the time of the Forest derby. Remember the fourth derby goal, completely down to him. He got levered off the ball by Marriott, that Farker said. But then he started him when there was a big clamour for Hanley at Brentford on New Year's Day. He said, because I asked him directly, why did you stick with Zimmer? He said he'd been his most consistent defender over the course of the season. So that hasn't changed in the intervening period. So it probably does come down to, does Godfrey or Closer partner Zimmermann? And I would go with DF all day long, because look what you had on Saturday. West Brom did the homework. They squeezed. The ball kept going back to Krull, clubbed it out of play time after time after time. You have Closer in that side. He's comfortable enough to step into midfield and get them playing through the thirds. And he's the only centre-back on the books who can do that. Puts less pressure on Krull. So for me, it's a very straightforward decision. Closer comes in alongside Zimmermann.
And one more, and it's come up with a few people, so I'll take Gavin Johnson's. Is it time to mix it up and start Jordan Rhodes ahead of Teemu Pukki? And I know we touched on this a little bit earlier, but what do you reckon, Dave?
I think it's difficult. I think the only way you can do it really is if you put Pukki in the sort of 10 role with Rhodes up front, which we saw early doors in the season, didn't we? And it worked okay. But we now know that that's not where Pukki is best used, is it? He is best lurking on the shoulder of the last defender and being in the right place at the right time. And, you know, I think Rhodes is a very good finisher, but Norwich don't really play with a target man. They don't really play with out-and-out wingers, do they? Although, no, there is a bit of width there, but they then tend to work their way into the box, don't they? It's not too many crosses come in from that end. I think the big biggest thing is getting him more time off the bench. But you, no one can say to Daniel, you've been playing Pukki too much. You know, you think about those late goals. Think how many times he has won so many points for Norwich this season. Timo Pukki can't be sacrificed for anyone, really. So I think Jordan's in a difficult situation, but all he can do is come on and keep taking his opportunities.
Tell you what, Paddy, got one very quick one, but it might not have a quick... Well, try and distill it as best you can, as quickly as you can, from Bob Just Bob at Killington Bob. Daniel Farke's contract, what actually is it at the moment, and when should we expect any announcements?
Well, it's a two-year deal, so that means he's out of contract at the end of this season. The last I heard, there was a few discussions with his agent. Maybe not quite on the same page, as always, with these discussions, whether it's players, managers, whatever. The finances need to be right. I don't think it's a question of whether he'd want to stay. I think he definitely would want to stay because he's built something and got it grown to a certain level, but he would probably feel you'd need another season or another season after that. And when you've put so much effort in that he's had and had to deal with losing US players, seeing them sold from under you this time last year, did he want to lose Pritchard from a footballing sense? Absolutely not. Same with Maddison, same with Murphy, same probably even with Johnny Howson. So you go through all that pain, you now almost have got the ship pointing in the direction you want. Why wouldn't you want to power through? So, yep, on a footballing dimension, I think all parties are on the same page, but the finances need to be right, and the length of contract, and Weber said something interesting, I think it was at the AGM, where if they don't go up this season again, it'll be a summer of, I'm afraid, having to sell one or two of their better young players. And does Daniel sign a contract now and then basically doesn't go into that with his eyes wide open, because it could be that back in the summer it's another two steps back before you can go forward. So, you know, it's not as straightforward as, do you want to be here? Yes, shake my hand, let's go for it. So I don't think there's going to be anything imminent. I'd be surprised if there was an imminent decision. I think very much the sense I would get is there's one big thing at the minute, and that's trying to get Norwich out of this division. So let's focus on that and put anything contractually on the back burner. And every time you ask Farke, he doesn't strike you as a man. And he's not, I don't think, saying it just for the effect of saying it. I generally don't think he lies awake at night thinking, where is this contract? Why hasn't it been signed? So I think he's relaxed about it. So why not the rest of us?
Could that even be a carrot and stick situation? Mr. Weber keeping Daniel hungry, Campwell hungry, Closer hungry?
Well, he's a very tough negotiator, is Mr. Weber, so it's entirely plausible. But I do know, but between Weber and Farke, there's not a cigarette paper between them. They're on the same page in so many aspects, and you can see that synergy in what's happening to the football club now, not just on the pitch, but in the academy and all areas of the business. So, and let's not forget, go right back to when Weber came in. Farke was his number one choice because he felt Farke was the guy who could carry out the philosophy he had for that football club. So that hasn't changed, clearly. If anything, that's probably only strengthened that relationship. So you'd like to think that, all things being equal, it will get sorted. But as I say, I think there's more pressing matters at the minute on the pitch.
Okay, the week ahead then, gentlemen, is Birmingham at home coming up. It's on a Friday night. That's exciting. Live on the telly, if you've got that particular telly, which is good. But you know, it's a long time, obviously, since Norwich played at Birmingham at the very start of the season, Dave. But we can now appreciate that was a pretty good point, wasn't it? Especially given Norwich were behind twice in the game, weren't they? Yeah. So, but then, do we kind of all look at it thinking, well, actually, out of these group of four games, this is the winnable one?
No, I think it's going to be difficult, because we went into that game on the opening day of the season with them in crisis, didn't we? Financial issues, transfer embargoes, etc. So Gary Monk isn't playing that sort of open, expansive style that he tried to continue at Swansea, tried to implement at Middlesbrough unsuccessfully. He did get Leeds going a bit, didn't he, to be fair, in that way. But Birmingham are playing them. They're just very disciplined, organised, strong. He doesn't have a big squad to choose from, does he? So there's not a great deal he can do in terms of flexibility, and maybe that consistency has helped them. But they're eighth, they're 4 points out of the playoffs. They only just, I think it was 2-1, did they lose to Borough at the weekend? Yeah. So, you know, I think it'll be a tough game, but it'll be interesting to see how Norwich play it, because go back to Derby, they went 2-0 up against Derby, and everyone, we'd all banged on about how you know, they have to come from behind all the time, and they'd sort of fix that. They were 2-0 up and they were in a great position. They were playing brilliant football, and then they shot themselves royally in the foot twice. So, well, three times, I suppose, after a floodlight failure. So I don't see it as being a remotely easy game either. We just, it's going to be, for me, having Closer and Steeperman playing if they're both fit. You know, obviously Leitner's not going to be fit for this one, but they've got to get back towards that strongest 11, and if you're going to be in the automatic mix, this is a game you've got to win.
And I think you said it, I can't remember where you said it, Paddy, but it might have been on the Q&A actually at lunchtime at pinken.com. You know, their point is pretty decent at the Hawthorns, but you have to sort of cash it in, yeah, with your home form. And it is a little while since they picked up a home win, isn't it? Maybe purely in terms of calendar, but of course they drew against Forest, lost at home to Derby, as Dave just mentioned as well, and Bolton, and I guess Millwall before that as well. Rotherham, they weren't necessarily straightforward affairs.
They had, was it five on the bounce? Villa, Brentford, Millwall, Rotherham, Bolton. Yeah, they were. That was five home wins and a bounce, because I think they were going for, if it had been a six, it would have been the first time in a long, long time. I can't remember off the top of my head, but yeah. So to go from that to the epics of 3-3 and 3-4 against Forest and Derby. Portsmouth's irrelevant anyway, isn't it? It's a different team, really, a different emphasis. So, yeah, if you're going to be a promotion team, your home form's got to be strong.
Absolutely, yeah. Now, this is a massive game. Of this stretch of five, which started with West Brom, that wasn't, I don't think, any chatter about Birmingham. It was about West Brom, Leeds, Sheffield United, then it was about Ipswich. Birmingham could be the biggest one, because if they don't get a result here, it's very hard to see how they get results in, well, certainly Leeds and Sheffield United games. And yeah, in terms of the top two mix, then if you can't beat Birmingham at home, then you're not going to be in the top two mix, because there'll be bigger challenges ahead. So yeah, this is very big. This could either kick them on again, or you might see them plateauing, and then it might be a scrap to stay in the top six.
Oof. What a note to finish on. Thanks very much, gentlemen. Just to let you all know that, of course, Pink and Joe will be back on Wednesday evening, live from 6 p.m. on Twitter, at YouTube, pinken.com, Facebook, Periscope. I've probably missed one, but most of those things. And of course, we're live Friday night with all our coverage of Norwich City hosting Birmingham. We'll have the press conference coverage beforehand as well, and all the reaction and analysis you could need after the game. So you know where to keep it, pinken.com. Any other business, gents?
I know the one you forgot.
What's that?
The papers. Buy a paper.
Oh, buy a paper. Yeah, buy a paper. That would be good. Yeah, this is it. We do still do those. And of course, any other business will be in our new Pinken podcast, Extra Time, that we're going to film now. Dave's very excited. So that is on the Pinken app. Make sure you download the Pinken app if you haven't already. It's great. Other than that, we are done. Thank you very much to all you guys for listening. It's always really appreciated. Goodbye, Pat.
Goodbye.
Cheerio, Dave.
Thank you all.
Ta-ra, Tony.
See ya.
Remember, pinken.com for all the latest Norwich City news, analysis, opinion, and possibly transfer insight. We'll be back with you each and every Monday, two on the trot now. So make sure you get in touch and get involved. This is, of course, your podcast as much as it is ours. We will answer that quiz question, muse over the championship table and our potential changes for Birmingham over the Pinken podcast Extra Time. And you can get that on the app. Until then, here's to a return to winning ways, just in time for a fresh meeting with Mr. Wilder. Goodbye.